This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show. Lovingly curated on Thursday, November the 18th by our producer, Isa Havilio. We've got some crackers today, actually. First up, first out of the blocks, Tony Douglas, CEO, Etihad Aviation Group. We've been trying to get an interview with Tony literally for years, and we've got it down at the air show in Dubai this week. So that's first out the blocks. Then Brandy in Abu Dhabi at ADIPEC has been speaking to, among others, Mohamed Barkindo, the Secretary General of OPEC. Yeah, it's been a good day. One of those good days when the stars are aligned. Then we're talking real estate. We've got a double header. We've got Ari Kesisoglu, who's the boss of Property Finder and one of our favourite real estate brokers, an award-winning real estate broker, Abdullah Alajaji. He's the founder of Driven Properties. All of that to come. First up, though, here is Serena with your top stories. Hey, Serena.
Morning, guys.
So let's talk about the UAE being one of the safest places in the world. One of the top stories you and the guys at the ARN News Centre are covering today. This is according to Gallup. What do we know?
So the global report, the Gallup Law and Order Index, measures people's sense of personal security and experiences with crime and law enforcement. So the UAE has ranked second with a score of 93. The report covers 115 countries and territories. So 95% of UAE residents said they feel safe walking alone at night, which is the highest rate in the world, apparently. The top five in this report, Norway, topped the overall rankings with a score of 94.
Oh, Scandies are always up there, aren't they? Really are. God bless
but
them.
But 94 and then 93 with the UAE.
You've got to be pretty brave walking home alone any night in the Scandinavia, especially this time of year. Freezing!
Yeah, very
should
much
be indoors.
So. But
Huga.
No, go on.
No,
go on.
No, hashtag Huga.
Oh, right, sorry.
Yeah.
So Norway, 94. UAE, 93. So there's only a points difference, followed by China, Switzerland and Finland. And one thing that the Gallup survey did release information-wise was that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, they were unable to field its surveys in Singapore and Afghanistan, two countries that have consistently scored the highest and lowest, respectively, on the index as well. But yeah, UAE's done pretty good.
Don't want to come across as insensitive here. Won't be the first time or the last time. But it's interesting, isn't it, that in this day and age, in the digital age that we live in, and given the fact that we sit here in the morning, we talk about data and we talk about AI and we talk about this, that and everything and how you can glean any information. But something as simple as walking home alone at night can still be a guidance on a poll and a guidance of safety. It's quite refreshing, that, to a certain degree.
Yeah, very. And it just, yesterday, I took my son for a golf lesson and I ordered a coffee, so I needed to go and meet the delivery.
Get me one.
Yeah. Shush. But I absentmindedly left my handbag on my chair and I walked a good few meters out of sight, but I came back and it was still there. And I was just like, I could not.
Your son had gone, but your handbag was.
My son had gone, yeah. But in my head, I was like, there is nowhere else I could feel comfortable doing this anywhere in the world. Like, I just had a moment. I was like, I can't believe I just did that. But at the same time, I can, because I've lived here for so long and I knew it was still going to be there when I got back.
Someone's probably been through it and gone, there's nothing worth
there's
taking
nothing
in there.
What is this? And sanitizer?
Very quickly, staying with surveys, Tom, you were looking at the brand survey from YouGov about the top brands in the UAE. And we've had a couple of people writing in about this. Andy writes in because you mentioned the fact that Almarai was one of the top brands, number four.
Fourth, yeah.
Ahead of Google, ahead of Apple.
Yeah.
Andy writes in saying, Almarai, better known than Google, And he goes,
so how do they do this, YouGov? It measures brand overall health in a region, if you like. Takes into account impression quality, value satisfaction, recommendation, reputation. So let's take Emirates, for example. Its brand health actually dived a little by 1.8, don't worry about the numbers. It dived a little because of the impact of flight restrictions. So therefore, the brand health was diminished a little bit in terms of the eyeballs on that brand and the amount it was used, but obviously continued to hold that stronghold. Almarai, though, moving up four places to fourth, strengthening its brand perception over the past year. again, I suppose it's because, A, they've had a very significant advertising campaign. B, you know, during the pandemic, people turned inward in many ways. They looked to their own on many occasions, and they looked for things of comfort and things that they could rely on. And a homegrown brand like Almarai was exactly that. And there was a lot, there was a big drive, I think, between people backing homegrown talent, products, produce, radio stations as well, and they came into their own in the pandemic. I met somebody last night, and this is, and bless you, whoever you were. We're talking to someone from the Spanish embassy last night, and a guy came up to me as I was leaving this event last night and said, look, I just want to take a little opportunity, if I may. I haven't had the opportunity to do it. I haven't sent a text, but I just want to say thank you to you and all the team at Dubai Eye, specifically all the team on the Business Breakfast, for being there for us during the pandemic. Like choking up a bit. I said, oh my gosh. And he said, no. He said, it's not, I'm not just saying that because of tonight. It was just through those very troubling times, it was just very reassuring. Actually, I mentioned Serena as well. I thought, oh no, you ruined it now. I tell you. But he said, it was so reassuring to have a local radio station that we could go to. Ordinarily, it's podcasts here and tuning in to Chris Evans over in the UK and Seacrest over in the States, etc. But and I think that is what's driven this thing here. So, yeah, I mean, you look at Almarai and say, what? Almarai is a bigger brand than YouTube. You're having a laugh, aren't you? What? Puck Sauce is bigger than cat videos and things like that. No, of course it's not. But what it is, what it has, it came into its own, I think, during the pandemic, as did a number of other brands.
I take your point. A very, very, very valid point. Andy, I hope that answers your question. Serena, other stories you're looking at today. You're actually looking at a business story because there are some new guidelines for exchange houses, particularly when it comes to anti-money laundering.
Yeah, that's right. So the new guidelines to combat money laundering and the financing of terrorism. It's the UAE Central Bank. They've given exchange houses 1 month's time to comply with the latest rules that actually came into effect yesterday. So they must maintain an effective program designed to prevent misuse of their business to facilitate money laundering or terrorist financing. They also need to conduct regular risk assessment processes that covers all degrees of risk to their business. But the banking regulator also said the risk assessment findings should inform the program's comprehensive policies, procedures, internal controls, and employee training to mitigate risks effectively. But this is something, as I said, came into effect yesterday, and the exchange houses have 1 month to basically fall into line.
Okay, good stuff. Let's talk about National Day. Not the UAE's National Day, which is a couple of weeks away, but Oman's National Day.
Yep, 51st National Day. The UAE is lined up some celebrations, which is obviously the UAE National Day today. Sorry, Oman's 51st National Day today. So you've got a range of events and activities in store for Omani visitors as well as UAE residents. UAE leaders, they were sharing their congratulations with Oman yesterday. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President, Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, tweeted a video highlighting the UAE and Oman's brotherly ties. That video is up on the AM News Centre app, should you wish to take a look. But yeah, just expect a lot happening around Expo, the races at Maidan tonight. Yep, all marking the special occasion.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Down at the Dubai Air Show yesterday, loving the Dubai Air Show. I was at the big fancy swanky do last night, but the main thing, of course, is business. It's about doing deals down at the air show. Tony Douglas is the Group Chief Executive Officer of Etihad Aviation Group. Sat down with him yesterday for an extensive interview, and this is what he told me, starting with the two planes that they've got on the runway down at the air show. They've got a Boeing and an Airbus. They're both eco-friendly.
So we've done an awful lot with the Greenliner. It was first introduced here 2 years ago in the 2019 air show. And of course, since then, we've broken all manner of sustainable records. We've got the longest distance flight on 50% sustainable aviation fuel. And the particular aircraft in question, on the 23rd of October this year, flew from London Heathrow into Abu Dhabi International Airport, and it was 72% better from a sustainable performance than our equivalent flight 2 years earlier. So there's still an awful lot to do, but these two aircraft are the poster children of what we stand for.
Okay, so you've convinced me and I can see them. your average business breakfast listener, whether in Dubai or Abu Dhabi or elsewhere, they're a cynical bunch. I'm not going to lie. They're going to be listening to this and going, really? Sustainable aircraft? Convince them that it actually is better for the environment rather than just greenwashing and a nice bit of PR.
So first of all, there is no silver bullet, and this is not a problem that will resolve itself entirely anytime soon. However, to the cynical listener, allow me to unpack where that 72% came from. First of all, the Greenliner is a 787, and the equivalent flight that we operated back in 2019 was an A380. So this aircraft is all composite. It's got the most modern aircraft engines and avionics. It's massively more fuel efficient. So that's the first big step, the latest generation of aircraft. The second part of it is the mix of aviation, sustainable aviation fuel. In the case of that eco flight, it was 38%. What we also did was optimize the flight route. And that might sound quite basic, but it actually makes a huge difference in terms of the way in which the aircraft climbs, goes almost in a straight line, and in particular, continuous descent. Saves 40 minutes on the flight time, 6 tons of CO2. So you put all of those things together with one other little ingredient, which is working with artificial intelligence, clever computers and the likes, to eliminate, wherever possible, the condensation trails in the sky. So when you look up and you see aircraft at altitude with those lines behind, we've been working on how we can minimise those.
I quite like those.
Well, they're good to look at, but they're not good for the environment. So that's the reason why we're challenging all of the above. But just back to that eco demonstration flight, they're the big pieces. It went all the way down to 80% reduction on single-use plastics. Even the water bottles were biodegradable. So it's the sum of all of the parts. And to the travelling public, it's our belief that going forward, that people will be far more discerning in choosing who they fly with on the basis of their sustainable credentials.
So what are the environmental economics of this? Is this cheaper for Etihad to operate, more expensive for Etihad to operate with the green fuel, or about the same?
So what we're using these two aircraft for, the Greenliner and the Sustainable 50, is really to shine the light on the broader challenges, a lot of which sit with governments, policy setters and regulators. So sustainable aviation fuel at the moment is 3x more expensive. Big issue. It's not one that aviation can resolve on its own, but what we're illustrating with this, unless it gets scaled up and the economics change, it won't be a sustainable solution to the sustainable problem. The second part of it with sustainable aviation fuel as well is why 38%? The reason to the answer to that question is we could only buy in the open marketplace the equivalent of 38% sustainable aviation fuel. We actually wanted to put 50% in. So there is a supply-related challenge. And finally, at Heathrow, the way it works is the 38% goes into the fuel farm. What actually goes into our aircraft is a relatively small percentage of that, but you get the carbon credit. What that shines the light on is we've got an infrastructure challenge as well. So the Greenliner and the Sustainable 50, they're really trying to bring together the challenges across the whole range of items here, from airports, from basically air traffic control, the way in which governments and policy setters incentivise rather than penalise, because there's no way those costs can be passed through ticket pricing to the travelling public. It just won't work that way.
Let's talk about Etihad. You had one of the most difficult jobs in aviation 3 or 4 years ago to turn around Etihad, and you acknowledge that. Then you throw in the pandemic, and blimey, that's a challenge. How are we doing in terms of a path to profitability for Etihad?
Never waste a good crisis. I think it's a cliche, but nonetheless true. The transformation program that we had to go through required some really tough decisions. And by 2019, we were well advanced with that. What could possibly go wrong? Answer, of course, the pandemic. And we took the decision to accelerate and push our way through that one. Where we are today is a fleet that's largely concentrating on the two aircraft types that I referred to, the 787 Dreamliner and the Airbus A350-1000. So we're hoping we'll come out of this faster and stronger. And what's great at the moment is coming to the air show. I was at Adipeki in Abu Dhabi yesterday. There's people full of energy because they can come back, do business face-to-face. I do love Zoom. I do love Teams. But I prefer to do it face-to-face like we all do. The market's starting to come back. And we're really excited by that.
And that was the point that Mohammed bin Zayed, His Highnesship Mohammed bin Zayed, turned up. And so Tony had to exit sharp left and give him a tour around the aforementioned Airbus A350. It was great to catch up with him. Tony Douglas is the Group Chief Executive Officer of Etihad Aviation Group.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's get some updates now from Adipec. Brandy Scott has been down there all week and she's been absolutely nailing it. She's been speaking to the great and the good of the energy industry. And to be honest, they don't come much bigger. That was, she's spoken to the UAE Energy Minister, Sahil Al-Masrui, the Indian Energy Minister, and also Mohammed Barkindo, who's the Secretary General of OPEC. Like I say, the great and the good. And as Brandy has been reporting, ADIPEC this week has been the oil conference dominated by talk of moving away from oil. That obviously is because of the timing, straight off the back of COP26. So the question she's been asking, what does the industry make of it all? Brandy was in conversation with the Secretary General of OPEC, Mohammed Barkindo.
What do you make of what came out of COP26? Was it a success or a failure?
I would certainly not characterize COP26 in Glasgow as a failure. The fact that the UK presidency of COP, working with John Kerry of the United States and other very important stakeholders, were able to make a very, very good attempt in rebuilding the global consensus that made the Paris Agreement possible, I think it's commendable. The fact that they have been able to address some of the contentious issues, although not to the satisfaction of everyone, I think it's also commendable. I think their efforts were genuine, but they met the limitations of the multilateral system.
So what does COP26 mean for OPEC?
All members of OPEC, member countries of OPEC, have signed the Paris Agreement. Majority have ratified it. They were all represented in Glasgow, and they tried to constructively engage parties to ensure that oil and gas is part of the solution to climate change and continues to play the noble role that it's playing in this transition.
So Brandy obviously picked him up on that, saying, hang on, how can oil and gas be part of the solution to net zero?
Number one, oil and gas will continue to whet the appetite of global consumers in the consumption of energy. In our focus in OPEC to 2045, nearly mid-century, oil and gas will still continue to provide over 50% of the global energy mix. So there is no replacement for these two sources of energy for the foreseeable future. The challenge is how to deploy technology and appropriate policies to address emissions that are coming out of this industry. And this is doable. And the industry, member countries producing, are ready to partner with the rest of the world to play our role in ensuring that we reduce emissions, which is the ultimate objective of Paris as well as Glasgow. Therefore, the narrative that this transition is from fossil fuels to renewables is misleading and distorted.
And so Brandy picked up on this theme of the seeming irony that OPEC is supporting the transition away from fossil fuels to more renewable energy. And of course, the related irony that an energy-rich economy, the UAE, has been chosen to host a COP, COP28. Brandy asked how significant that was.
It is very significant that COP27 will be hosted by Egypt, COP28 by United Arab Emirates. And we refuse to be depressed by the shortcomings of Glasgow. We see silver lining in these two COPs, that the issues that are still outstanding that have been officially forwarded to the next COP to be part of the agenda will be addressed in a comprehensive, inclusive manner that will also bring to the fore the issue of energy poverty. For us, climate change and energy poverty are two sides of the same coin.
A final word from the organiser of ADIPEC, Chris Hudson from DMG Events. Traditionally a petroleum event, but of course much more than that now. And he says governments are getting involved.
One of the key takeaways this year was about government regulation and what regulation you need to have in place across all governments to be able to provide more clean and affordable energy. So regulatory framework is a key byproduct from this year's ADIPEC. Our colleagues at COP set the agenda. Here, the industry enacts that agenda. One of those key conversations is what's the framework needed to ensure we provide more clean and affordable energy?
Certainly no shortage of punches at ADIPEC. I can vouch for that. I was down there. It was packed in a very socially responsible manner.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are talking property this morning, and it is an absolute pleasure to be joined in the studio by the boss of Property Finder. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Ari Kesisoglu is the president of Property Finder. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Very quickly, just quick before we get into the substance of the interview, I remember you were one of the last people we had in this studio before the pandemic. You just joined Property Finder, hadn't you, from one of the big international tech companies.
Indeed.
In January 2020?
In January 2020, I joined Property Finder from Facebook, and you were one of the first people that I spoke after that.
Yeah, you saw HR in the morning and then me.
Almost like that. It almost felt like an interview.
Exactly. It's good to have you with us, Ari. Thanks very much indeed for your time today. And we're going to be talking to one of your friends a little bit later on. First of all, let's talk about the real estate market. Okay, broadly speaking, it's flying at the moment. The UAE real estate market is doing really, really well. You know that, I know that, that's fine. But the question that we have is, there are still some pain points, either for people who are looking to buy a property or sell a property, people are looking to rent and maybe move home, or indeed the brokers who use the portals like yours. So even though it's doing really, really well, there are still some pain points. What are those pain points and how can we fix them to make the market even better?
Very good question. Indeed, the property market is doing quite well. Whatever data we look at, it is doing, you know, number of transactions are high, you know, and it seems to be, you know, continuing for a while. Having said that, buying a house, moving a house is always a stress. And just think of the last time that you moved, okay? And most of us moved at least to Dubai at some point. And then just think of the journey, how difficult it was. Just first identifying a property to see that, you know, you might end up liking, and then going there and visiting it, and whether the details that you saw about the property really reflect the property or not. And then you go in and you interact with agents. Some of them are amazing. A small number of them, not so much. And then you go to the transaction phase, you do the contract. All of this very, very stressful. And with literally all of them, there could be a problem. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make this journey less stressful for people. And it is a hard task.
One of the things we get asked about often, I don't know how valid this criticism is, I'd be interested to get your thought, is so-called fake listings on portals like yours. Of course, Property Finder is, you know, is a giant in that space. Are there fake listings out there, or is this just a myth? And if there are fake or semi-fake listings, what can we do about it?
Very good question. So a broader approach to it would be to call them false listings. Mm. Fake is a hard word. False would mean like some of the details about it might not be right or might have changed and not updated. And these are the challenges that we have. So yes, indeed, there are there will be some false listings. In our case, it will be a minority of the viewed properties on our portal, because we have more than 100,000, you know, significantly more than 100,000 listings, and then a few.
Really? For the UAE?
For the UAE, we have more than 130,000 actually at this point in time, and I'll tell you something super interesting. The split of this, we have rental properties and for sale properties listed. The split of that at the beginning of the year was very much skewed towards rentals, And right now, it's very much skewed towards sales. Now, the details of these properties is an interesting thing. Why? Because imagine you are at Property Finder, you're browsing, you're looking for the house of your dreams, and then you like a couple of them. Then what's the next thing you do is you call someone about it. And then you call, and then you figure out that, you know, again, in 95%+ of the cases, that is not the case. But in a small number of cases, that, you know, you call and then the details of these properties might not be exactly as what you have seen on our site. And we're doing so much, we're putting so much science to this, and it has improved significantly over the last couple of months. And basically what we can do is use science so that, hey, the price of this property doesn't look right. So we ask our agent partner, say, like, can you have a look, you know, make sure like there's no mistake in it. And that has improved, and we have so many other things to do, and so that the small percentage gets even smaller.
So how do you, as Property Finder, as a leading portal, how do you make sure that the listings on your site, and indeed the agents using your site, are the ones that are playing by the rules, that are playing fair? I know you've had very recently your brokerage awards, and you've been rewarding the best brokers, and that's great. And we're going to hear from one of them a little bit later on. And he's a lovely bloke. We really like Abdullah. But in some ways, it's not your job to police this industry. That's the job of RERA. We have a regulator for that. And yet, when you get to the scale of a Property Finder, you're so big and so important that you do have some kind of duty of care. How do you approach that, Ari?
Absolutely. We totally feel the duty on us. We just don't want to let the responsibility to something else, because we want to work very hard to make the property industry, to take the property industry to the next level. And we totally feel the responsibility on our shoulders. We do a couple of things. So first, we have on the pricing side, I mean, what's the first thing that you think about when buying a property or even renting a property is about the price. Why? Because for the overwhelming majority of the population, the property that you buy is actually the largest financial investment that you make over life, on your life. So a couple of percentage points of mistake in pricing might have massive consequences for the rest of your life. And we want to prevent that. Now, one thing that we do is we officially work with the government to publish the Dubai Price Index for properties called Moasher. And prepare everything, and then the Dubai government officializes it, and then we publish it every month. You can check it online at your favorite search engine. And then the other thing that we do is, like, everything that I said about our partnerships with the agencies overall, and we give them hints that, hey, look, you know, this, we surface some stuff that we see that might not be accurate. Again, a small minority of the cases, but they do happen. And then the last thing I want to talk about is that we actually want to recognize the agencies and also the agents who are really going above and beyond to push the quality higher and higher and higher.
And that brings us on to the next interview that Tom's going to be doing in a few moments' time, because you've had your awards. Who was the winner?
The winner is Driven Properties. They are the best large brokerage in Dubai.
Exactly. And Abdullah Alajaji, who is the founder of Driven Properties. Tom is going to be speaking to you in a few moments' time.
Indeed, yeah. Abdullah is waiting in the wings at the moment. We're going to get him into the studio and ask questions of he shortly.
That was the voice of Ari Kesisoglu, who's the president of Property Finder.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Absolute pleasure to have the boss still with us here this morning. Ari Kesisoglu is the president of Property Finder. He stayed with us. During the last chat, we talked about the Brokerage of the Year awards that are organised by the team at Property Finder. They are significant because they've been around for a long time. But if ever there was a year that you wanted to be made Brokerage of the Year, surely 2021 is that year, given the competition in the marketplace. And that's why it's very significant for Driven Properties. Their founder is no stranger to the show, no stranger to us. Abdullah Alajaji joins us live in the studio. Great to see you as always. Welcome again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Just to that point, I mean, look, you and your company are no stranger to awards. Is this one different because, A, just how well in such high regard the awards are held, but also the year in which you got it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the best years that the property market has seen, both in terms of transactions, volumes, and values. And at the same time, you know, it's further validation to the work that our company has been doing for the past few years, and specifically during the pandemic. So it is very important for us that it was in 2021 such an important year for the market, with the changes both regulatory and commercially. So we're very proud that a property finder has awarded us, and it's validation from the tech giants of the industry that make us do our jobs better. So we're very pleased.
I don't know whether to ask Ari or you this next question, so I might ask you both as well. I'm going to start with you, though, Abdullah, and then see if Ari concurs and can add anything. Why do you think you won it this year? Why do you think, you know, we've just heard about the competition out there in the market, the number of brokerages out there. Why do you stand head and shoulders above?
Well, I think it's a few things. I think what matters to Property Finder and therefore the market is quality, right? We really, you know, take care of the ensure that the listings are always accurate. We police them prior to going to our partners at Property Finder, so we make sure that their role and their job when it comes to our listings and our content is easier, because we police them in house through metrics that are related to machine learning, data science, elements of AI. So we learn from the prop tech giants in the industry. We ensure that before a listing goes live, we police them internally through data science metrics. And then, you know, we also ensure that we can scale that because of the tech that we use prior to going to our partners. And therefore, you know, we would hope that prior to this content going to Property Finder, you know, we would just have a much, much easier and much more fluid relationship, and that, you know, they would not have to come to us and say, well, you know what, this listing looks inaccurate, the price seems wrong, maybe wrong. So it's really that quality that you know, that goes through the ecosystem. And where we ensure that tech really plays a big role in enabling that quality to be had.
Ari, do you concur?
Totally. There are two extra things I would add, if I may. We have, I told you that we have more than 130,000 listings right now. Now, 30,000 of them, we actually verify them with our partners, Driven being one of them. And that partnership is important. Why? Because we want to put our stamp on it that, hey, like this property, we verified the documents, we know that it exists, we know that it's available. And then one factor in all this is like how well we partner, how well the quality of the property is reflected on our side. And then the second also, Abdullah is very humble and not mentioning this, but we also check the service of the agents to people who are buying or renting. How can we check that? Because we ask for feedback to people on our website. And we do have all these data points. And as a result of that, plus many other things, we chose Driven as the winner.
Let's talk rebounds if we can, Abdullah, because, you know, we sit here on the show and we try and make sense of the headlines at the moment. It seems that every single week we're seeing a new record being broken in terms of listings, in terms of numbers, in terms of rebounds. How do you quantify the Dubai property market rebound at the moment for people like me?
Well, people who are looking to buy now or sell now. I mean, it's interesting. Ari had mentioned earlier that there are now more sales listing than rental listings at this point in time in the year, you know, compared to the beginning of the year. And we're seeing that as well internally, in terms of yes, the market has improved substantially, both from transaction volumes and values, and it continues to be the case. And there are no signs of demand waning down at the moment. It's just that where supply is actually coming from is affecting that demand cycle. So, you know, when at the beginning of the year and late last year, most of the demand was coming to the secondary market. And because there were no developer or primary market at the time. that prompted developers, you know, during the summer and after the summer to launch big schemes because the market has improved substantially. So now you're seeing, you know, owners of properties, specifically in the villas and the townhouses market, which outperformed every market to jump into the supply side and list properties and engage in what is today a seller's market. So developers obviously now are seeing that and saying, you know what, there is liquidity in the system, so let's jump into that wagon as well. So come around April or May, you started seeing major launches from the likes of Imar, Nakheel, even Majid Al Futtaim, Maf, Damac, and Miras as well. Mm. So all of them launched massive schemes, and if you look at the trend, the vast majority of those are villa projects. Like in the case of Majid Al Futtaim, there were five major phases. District 1, you look at Al Furjan, Jabal Ali Village, Damac Lagoons also. Recently in Dubai Hills, there was a couple of launches. So you're seeing, yeah, now demand being sucked from developers, but that's, you know, that is to say that demand is very much still there.
Push for time. We've got about 30 seconds left for closing statements for you both. And that close an open-ended question to wrap things up. Is it cooling off at the moment, as some data would suggest? If not, when is it going to cool off?
In the secondary market, yes, I would say there are signs that there is more inventory in the market and less demand as prices have gone up. Developers are still coming up with schemes that work on the demand side, so there would still be demand on that. So generally speaking, that balance or that formula, when it will reach equilibrium, God knows, but we'll see.
Harry, 30 seconds. Is it cooling off? Should we be concerned?
I wish I had a crystal ball. What the data tells us that last couple of months have been very strong. Next few months, 2-3 months, it will still be strong, about the same level. After that, it all depends on macroeconomics, what the interest rates are, what the prices of the properties go towards, you know, what the landlords, what the developers decide and so forth. Many, many factors that will affect that.
Harry, really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much indeed for being with us this morning. Great to see you. And big thanks to all the team at Property Finder for your ongoing work for the industry as a whole. And congratulations to Abdullah and all the team at Driven Properties, Brokerage of the Year. Congratulations on the award and thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.